Are we live?
We're going.
All right, should I do my intro then?
Yeah.
Do your intro.
That's stupid punk rock. I just think of it as rock and roll, because that's what it is.
Neighbors.
No one loves you like he loves you.
You want Bill Sperm with that?
Sunday, you're back in the lab.
Your answer is non-sequitur.
All right, this is Stan with the Punk Rock Chronicles. It's our first podcast of 2024. Stoked to be here. We've got our usual suspects. What's up, Bob the Bastard?
What's up?
And then we got Chris, producer.
Hello.
Extraordinaire. And then we've got one of our old friends. I think this guy's been on our podcast the most, Mike McGran of Channel 3.
Hey, guys. My pleasure to be back.
Yeah, we're stoked. It's just I wanted to give a quick update of what we've been up to. We've been missing in action somewhat. We haven't done a podcast in a while, and we've been kind of busy with life. I just got out of jail, which sucked. No, just kidding. No, I didn't get out of jail. But I've been in a home jail working. And life has been busy for us. We've been working on our documentary. We're in the process of finding an editor, and I've got about 20 leads on a final editor to help us get this thing going. And then what else do we have going on? Oh, we're doing the Punk Rock Museum 1 year anniversary. Did you hear about that?
I saw that. That is fantastic.
Yeah, we're going to be in a fishbowl there. We're going to set up upstairs. Where there's like that big, what was that big skate festival that used to happen? The main one.
You mean the Warped Tour?
The Warped Tour. Yeah, it's like a shot from the Warped Tour. And it's like a whole wall. It's a picture. Somebody's doing a stage dive, and you see the crowd. And so we're going to set up right there, I believe, and then we're just going to be interviewing people for a couple days.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
Going back to the movie, how many hours of footage did you guys accumulate?
Oh, we've got like probably like 100 hours.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, it's absurd.
I know. I mean, I could feel for you guys, because when you started that project, it's like, watch, this is going to be never ending. Because
once you open
one can, it's like, well, we got to talk to these guys, right?
Yeah. It kind of unraveled that way. And on top of that, I mean, we're actually looking at making this a three or four episode series. Oh, yeah. Because it's too much information for one documentary. So we're looking at expanding the scope.
That's great. Congratulations on that.
I think we did over, 85 bands, and then plus artists, photographers.
Zines.
Record labels.
Wow.
Zines, everything. Yeah, so it was just too much for one movie.
Yeah.
It'd be ridiculous,
And it was cool, though. I mean, it was fun.
And now,
now we got to figure it out.
Now I see why people take so long to make documentaries. Remember we were like, oh, we'll do this in a year. We'll knock it out. Yeah, right. This is like a lifelong project, dude.
Yeah. But we're still working on it. I mean, it's hard because we're all like, family men with careers, and it's like, this is like our band, right? If we were in a band.
I hear that.
But,
all right.
Yeah, man. So, that's about it. So I think what we're going to do is, Chris, why don't you take us out in a song, and then we'll get this going.
I'm going to take us out in song. You want me to sing?
I would like you to.
But will you love me tomorrow? Just kidding. I don't know. What?
I think you mentioned a band that we've been really into lately.
We've been really into these punk and Espanol bands. And there's a band that we really like that we actually interviewed for our doc called Toscos.
Have you heard of T-O-Z-C-O-S?
I have not.
They fucking rule, dude.
Oh, yeah.
They told me it means rough in Spanish. They have a cool song, A Gusto en Miseria. So I think we'll do that song.
Rad.
I probably butchered the name, but that's a cool song. Yeah. So here we are.
Toscos. Rolls.
Enjoy.
We'll be right back.
right, man. Yeah, dude, that's a great song. And what I love about, actually, I was really bummed about missing the record release show. Remember, I got sick.
Yeah,
I was so bummed. I was waiting for that show. I don't get excited about things too often, and I was really excited about that one. And I was puking. I was, oh man.
No, I mean, you're in bad shape.
Big pile of shit.
But I'll tell you what the thing that got me really pumped about that show. I go to a lot of shows, and I've seen a lot of these bands a lot. I've seen Channel 3 a million times, right? Love it every single time. But there's a vibe with these younger bands coming up, and it's not just the excitement of youth, but it's also they're doing it in a way that they were doing it when we were kids and going to those shows. So I felt like a freaking 13-year-old kid again going to a punk show where there's danger, there's... Chris and I were commenting that we were looking around the room and you saw 18 different punks looking 18 different ways.
That's
instead
great.
Of a sea of guys looking all the same with the same outfit.
Well, yeah, it's so important because we were just talking about the Pomona Pucka Fest, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, God bless all those bands, but, you know, where are the new bands? You know, you got to make room for the new kids coming up, you know. It's easy to feel guilty. It's like, you know, we get to enjoy our bands going on 40 years now, but there is still a brand new batch of bands coming up there, so you know.
And it's just great to see that they have that, they're keeping the spirit of it intact, you know what I mean? Because it's really easy to get sloppy and lazy. You've got everything at your disposal, social media, and you know, you could be in 5 different countries and record as a band and never see each other, you know. But the way that they're doing this is like Stan was saying, they're networking, they're putting in the work, and they're doing it old school, and the people that are showing up have that enthusiasm, the same enthusiasm they had when we were like kids.
That's awesome. I gotta check them out.
Yeah,
and those kids have energy, man. They're stage diving, doing flips, crowding the stage, like all the cool stuff.
And a bunch of like old school like cholo dudes, right? Like fathers, you know,
mixed with like young, because it was an all ages show, which was fun. You know, you get to see like what the kids look like now in that scene. So,
well, you know, the thing is, speaking of shows and everything else, you guys, Channel 3, man, you guys have been all over the place lately, right?
Yeah, it was a busy 2023. We put out the 40-year anniversary double album. And then we toured behind that. We hit you know, East Coast, Midwest, Pacific Northwest, and all that. And then we got done with that, and then we went to Japan with the Avengers, which was just the trip of a lifetime, you know? I mean, it's always been my dream to go tour in Japan. And
that was your first time going to Japan?
Yeah. Well, I've been to Japan, but we've never toured there.
Oh, okay.
And, you know, me being half Japanese, I was thought, you know, we got to get over there. And I kind of thought that we kind of missed the window. I was thinking, you know, they don't know us anymore. But we went over there, and every show, there'd be a line of guys there with the original 1982 records and No Future. And they were just like, I'm serious. They would be in tears going, we thought you'd never come, you know. And it was just a fantastic.
That's so rad.
So a great tour. Reception for you guys over there.
Yeah.
Cool, man.
And then we got back end of October, and then immediately my book came out on DeWolf Publishing, and then we went back out to the East Coast and Midwest and here and there to tour a little bit behind the book. So I'm kind of in the middle of book promo now, and the band's starting up for the year again, and we're back in Europe this summer, and so it'll all keep going.
Let me ask you something about the book. What prompted you to write one now? And you know, what got you going on it?
Well, you know, I guess COVID was a good reason to sit down and write a book, right?
Uh-huh.
But, a lot of people know that I've kept a long-running blog of the band's exploits for, God, close to 2 decades. So I kind of had the tone of writing, and there were enough people that are familiar with my style of writing that people were asking for a book. And really it was just that downtime that I kind of sat down and said, okay, I'm going to write a book. It's hard to think about how are you going to put, you know, your 40 years of life into a book, but I found a framing device I found a journal of one 1983 summer tour we took. And I said, okay, this will be the physical journey around the country of the band. And then within that, I interlaced the story of, my family, my mom being Japanese during World War II, all that, and meeting Kim when we were kids, growing up against the very start of punk rock, you know, and it really just became a story of two friends that are fans of music that somehow get to get on stage with their heroes, you know?
You know, it must have been really interesting for you to relive those, going through your journals and then relive it and like, oh, I forgot about this.
Yeah.
Oh, man, I haven't thought about that in 20 years. It must have been a real trip.
Well, you know, I state right off that it's kind of autobiographical fiction because I use those events to kind of make up a story that would illustrate the feeling of where we were. Uh-huh. So, you know, it is a work of fiction, but it's all based on truth. Right. And it does include all the characters, the bands that we stayed with, the clubs and everything like that.
But in formulating that story, you still relived all those moments, yeah. You know, and it must have been interesting to relive those.
Well, and it's interesting that we actually had a camera along that summer, and we've got a stack of photographs, which is, you know, nowadays, of course, everyone's got a photo and you see every moment of every day. But back then, it was a little 110 Instamatic that you had to, like, get the film and protect it all summer and had to have it developed at Jumco.
Right. That's so rad.
That's amazing, man. So, yeah, you've been really promoting this book, and I've been following you, always follow you on social media, and you've been all over the country, you know, East Coast. I mean, how are some of these book signing events how well received has it been so far?
Well, it's great. It's a new thing for me, which is all exciting. It's a different animal than going out and promoting a record. I think a record has a certain shelf life when it's a new release, so you have to really crack it down. But with a book, you know, people read slower. A book stays in the shelf longer, so you have a little more time to relax. And, you know, you come into town, and we do these small venues. If it's a reading, maybe, you know, 15, 20 people show up, and that's great. If we do a little gig, sometimes I incorporate readings into that. Sometimes we just play a show and have the book at the merch booth and sign copies. So it's been a really cool experience doing that. DeWolf Publishing, they're all based on the East Coast, so that was kind of cool because I got to go back to Philadelphia and New Jersey and New York a couple times and do the promo there, which just felt really cool to say, you know, going back to the East Coast publisher and doing that in the middle of winter. So it's been great.
That is rad, dude. That's amazing. So part of this episode, we wanted to actually get DeWolf Publishing on. And so I'm going to give our friend Steve a call right now and chime him in and get his experience with you.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
Yeah, you just need the keypad. Boop, boop, boop,
yeah.
Boop.
Why she won't answer.
Hello.
Yeah, hi. Can I speak to Steve, please?
That would be me.
Does your car warranty run out this year, sir? Steve, it's my car, you son of a bitch.
That would have worked if I wasn't so goddamn poor. I don't even own a car, so.
Nice.
I am doing well. How's everybody doing in there?
We're great.
Great.
Yeah, we're great. We're enjoying some beautiful sunny Southern California weather for a winter.
Yeah,
we're lucky here.
It's nice and cold. It was kind of pissy raining most of the day today, but now it's just cold here in good old Philadelphia.
Nice. Now, you guys should be honored because this is the latest Steven stayed up past his bedtime in about 10 years. So it's 11 o'clock over there, you know?
Yeah.
No, shit.
I feel it too, man. I automatically wake up early. It sucks. I'll be up at
me
4
too.
Or 5. Yeah, and I'll be texting these guys in the morning, like 4 or 5 in the morning. And they probably thought I never slept. They probably think I'm on drugs or something. But I'm just waking
up.
But I could go to bed at 11 or 12 and I'll still wake up at 4.
Oh, yeah.
It sucks, man.
Same thing. It started happening to me like in my 30s, and the thing that is now, you know, I got two crazy cats, and if I'm not up by 5 at the latest, they're both jumping on my head for food, so I got no choice in the matter.
Smacking you, huh?
Oh, it's terrible.
Oh, that's funny. That's funny. So, yeah, you know, we're stoked to have you guys on. You know, we love Channel 3. We love Mike McGran. And
thank you for having me on, and I love Mike McGran too.
Yeah, absolutely. And then, you know, I've been following what you've been doing for a while, and actually we've been reading your books that you've been publishing, and we love
that's awesome.
We love to promote punk rock, man, and seeing some of these book publishers out there. We're trying to interview a bunch of them, so we're stoked to get you on. But I kind of want to talk about you guys, Mike and you. Can you kind of talk about how you guys got together? How did that whole arrangement come out?
You know, I think it would really come from Dave from Adrenaline OD. Put out his book, and Dave's an old pal of mine going back to, you know, our first New York trip in 1982. And so when he put out that book, I said, hey, you know, what's his deal with that? And he said, get a hold of Steve. And I soon learned that Steve and Amy, you know, they just are really passionate about their projects. And as you can tell, their catalog is just growing exponentially.
Yeah.
And so it really recalls the early days of independent records, like when we got on Posh Boy. You know, we were just so fortunate to get on a label that was up and coming, passionate about their projects, constantly moving and shifting, and it's been a fantastic ride. And, you know, as soon as I made contact with Steve, we just saw eye to eye. He served as the editor on this project, and so we were in, you know, almost daily contact, and it turned out great. I couldn't imagine a better partner.
Wow.
Yeah, that's pretty much, you know, exactly. You know, I had been working with Dave for so long, and, you know, Dave, Adrenaline OD is one of those bands, you know, being so close. They're a band I basically listened to in high school. So it was kind of like working with a rock star for me. And that was so cool. And then as we were wrapping that up, you know, he mentioned Mike and Mike's idea, you know, to write a book and everything. And I'm a reader. It was like Mike was saying, like my passion is for good books. I've always been a reader. So I tell anybody, if you've got something to send me, I'll gladly read it. And they, you know, like Dave put me in contact with Mike. And as Mike said, you know, we just, it felt for me that we clicked right away. And then I started reading this stuff, and I was absolutely blown away by the writing. And because it was so different from any other, you know, your typical punk rock, you know, I'm doing air quotes here, your punk rock memoir, whatever. It was just such a great read for me that, you know, I dropped everything I was doing. I was like, we got to do this book.
That's sick, man. That's amazing. So, how long did it take, like, for you guys to put this book out from when you guys first made that initial contact with each other and then actually releasing it?
What would it be, Steve? I guess maybe close to a year of,
I think that's about right. I was lucky as an editor and as a publisher. You know, what Mike sent me, first he sent me a small sample, but he basically had a finished manuscript like really, really quick. And I kept telling him from an editorial standpoint, I fell in love with it. So from my standpoint, I didn't think it needed anything changed. You know, I was always encouraging Mike, you know, go with your guts, because you could tell right away he's a natural born talented writer. And so really what kept it going was Mike would have these great ideas, or something would lead to another thing, and he was doing rewrites and he was really tightening it up. So it was, you know, a lot of books, you know, depending on what you're putting into them, they can take anywhere from a year, 5 years, 10 years if you're doing something where you're collecting a lot of information. So this was relatively quick. And like I said, Mike pretty much had his ideas very well formed, and he's such a great writer. It did not take a lot. It was not a difficult project to work at all.
Well, it was interesting because I thought, okay, I wrote a book, and can I see it in print now? But I probably finished that book in 2020, you know, like by July. And then, you know, I said, okay, where are the publishers come knock my door right now? And it's funny because I had been talking to, like, say, Jerry from Poison Idea, and he released those three books at one time. And he said, dude, you will not see this in print for 2 years. I said, get the fuck out of here. He said, dude, just keep writing other stuff. You won't see it for 2 years. And sure enough, it was 2 years later before we even got it down. I had a couple, you know, false start with other publishers that were kind of interested, but it was a tougher sell because it's not just a straight ahead, you know, punk rock memoir. And shockingly, there's no pictures in it. You know, that's the first thing people look for. But, you know, working with Steve, and it really encouraged me to, I probably cut it down by a third, but to what you see here. And like I said, you know, we were just kind of going back and forth, tightening it up. And once that was done, it was pretty short process to getting the finished copy.
Nice. Yeah. That's amazing. So what so you guys have been doing pretty active book touring, and Mike kind of touched on it a little bit. Steve, like on your end, like how much involved are you in the promotion side, like getting some of these in stores and lined up and all that?
To be honest, I really wish, you know, we were a lot more involved. And the only thing that holds that back, obviously, are, you know, the resources of promotion. But for me, one of the things with DeWolf, and kind of one of the reasons that we're probably shooting ourselves in the foot a lot of the times, is I can only work with something that I fully 100,000% believe in. I can't do like a halfway project and pretend to promote it, because that's not me. I'm not a natural promoter. But that being said, with all the books that we've done, you know, I've loved them from the minute, and I've really vibed with the people we've worked with. So for me, like, we do as much grassroots kind of stuff and free stuff that you could take advantage of. Obviously, nowadays, you know, social media is kind of it's a blessing and a curse. You know, in some ways it's a godsend to us, but you know, I'm sure you know yourself running a page, that if you do anything publicly, those algorithms will just clamp down on anything you're trying to do to spread your word, not even to sell products, just to get your, whatever you're trying to do, your mission, to be heard. And so, you know, we use whatever we can. If we have to buy promotion on social media, you know, we do that when projects come down. We've been really lucky too. One of the great things working with musicians, or people who are at least familiar with working in music, they naturally know how to promote things. They know
that's
like
the truth.
Like Mike knows, you know, if Channel 3's playing some shows, hey, it ain't gonna hurt to have a couple copies of the book at the merch table and let them know at the end of the set, hey, I did this, you can pick this up. Same thing with Dave. Dave's like a friggin' promotional machine. So that really helps. And I say, I try to be as upfront and as honest with people when we first start working with them. It's like, look, here's what we can offer to do for you. We don't have, you know, we're not Random House. We're not, you know, whoever is around, you know, it's a big publisher, but you will have two people who are incredibly committed to your project. We won't do it just because we see an opportunity there. We will do it because we love it. So,
right on. Well, you know, it's the truth that, you know, punk rockers especially, you know, we have something to promote. We're going to go out there and promote it, you know?
Right.
We look at it like a record. It's like, well, let's go out and hit the road. And, you know, I am shameless about hey, there's a bookstore. I walk in there and it's like, here's some books, and I'll put them on the shelf and see how it goes, and I'll be in touch with you.
Yeah. That's Simon, right?
Last week I was up in San Francisco. I went to City Lights. I said, you know, there's a scene in this book at City Lights bookstore. I need you guys to hold this book. And they're like, well, bring in some sample copies. We'll see how it goes.
Nice.
And yesterday I was at the Cerritos Public Library. I said, I am a son of a Cerritos. You guys have to have this book. And they said, okay, great. You know?
Yep. Yep.
So what do you call it?
And here's the thing too, like you said earlier, you know, we're very passionate about, what Amy and I are really passionate about, is maybe the one thing over the music itself, is the preservation of this sort of culture that you know, not only she and I have benefited from, but, you know, literally millions of people over the past 50 years, 60 years have benefited from these type of musical subcultures that we want to align ourselves with. And as we all know, nobody outside our world gives a shit about it unless they can make a buck off it. So it's kind of really up to us to do these kinds of things, to preserve these histories, to make sure that these great fucking stories, you know, are put somewhere and they're kept somewhere for posterity.
Yeah, I mean, it's very much like the movie project you guys are working on, you know. This is a worthwhile slice of history.
Yeah.
That I think as you get more distance from, it's because, holy shit, you know, that really meant something.
Oh yeah, and we see it. You know, we see it, and that's why we do what we do. Exactly.
Exactly.
I mean, you know, we'll do a podcast. We'll do we'll follow bands around, we'll film them, we'll photograph them, we'll interview them, we'll do what we can to promote the scene that we grew up in and to keep it alive, man. It's got to be documented in one way or another.
Absolutely.
Preservation's the key. You know, what I'm curious about real quick is when you do these promotional book tours, you must have a network set up of willing participants that are going to – you can count on to give it in store to help push the book, right, to give you guys an audience, like beforehand, right?
As a publishing company, we have some, but we definitely should be having more. We should have more of a network forged of, you know, the smaller independent bookstores that are still around. Like, you know, in our area, we're pretty good with Philadelphia, the surrounding areas. We've got some really great friends in New York. Thanks to Mike and Mike's latest efforts over this past year, we've made some good friends out west, out in California, out in Los Angeles with you guys. But yeah, there's definitely a network out there that, you know, it's sort of like, it's sort of going back circular to what music and touring was like for Mike and those guys of that era. Like, it's very small. It's very difficult to sell books nowadays in this culture. It's even more difficult to get people excited in, like, book-type events.
And that's exactly my point, because I'm an avid reader, right? And I'm still one of those guys that loves, man, you could go online – get Audible all you want, man, but there's something about going to a bookstore that's special.
Right.
And it's a mutually beneficial situation to have these guys, this network across the country, to keep these authors, giving them a place to showcase their work and
absolutely
bring people into their bookstores and create some excitement and keep those brick and mortar places alive.
Yeah, well, you know, that's a tough sell though, because I think record stores, you know, they're going away, but for every five indie record stores, there's only one bookstore.
Yeah.
And you know, like you say, it's a hard sell to get somebody raised in this social media day to sit down quietly by themselves and read a book for a couple hours to themselves, you know. So
you're right.
You know, I am thankful for everyone who sits down and reads a book, you know, and opens the pages and considers that. So God bless them.
Absolutely. And so are we. And that's kind of why, like one of the things about DeWolf is, you know, Amy and I kind of decided when we started that, you know, we'll take on projects, and one of the things we'll sacrifice numbers in order to make a better book. In other words, like, you know, you can make a book on the very cheap, and you know, you could self-publish your own book. You could do it. People do it every day. And then, you know, you go to the other extreme where, you know, if you want to make a really big, beautiful book, it's really fucking expensive. And we decided long ago that two things that we're going to do is we're going to work with very cool people who have very interesting and different tales to tell, and we're going to spare no expense on, even if we can only do a 500 print run of a book, we'd rather make it something beautiful that's going to hold up for, you know, generations, really, if you pass it on to people, other than these kind of disposable, like, you know, here it's printed on crappy paper, we don't give any attention to the photograph. So we've done some art books that are just like fully photographed books, and, you know, we've lost our shirts on them, but we don't care, because that's how it needs to be done.
It's an art.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's a good quality book, for sure. I mean, this is a nice book.
Thank you.
The one thing as a publisher I look to do is, and this is to Mike and to anyone who ever fucking wrote a song or put out a record, as much love and effort as you guys put into making music, that's what I want to do when I put out books about your music or other people's music.
Well, you guys are going to have to hire some more people, because, man, your catalog is growing, isn't it?
Hopefully, yeah, we've gotten really lucky. We ran into some really good projects over the last year or two. So, you know, knock on wood, we got, you know, it all depends on the people that we work with.
Right.
You know, if you don't have authors with, if you don't have good authors, then you really got nothing. So, I put it all on them, man. We, with Dave and with Mike, we got so lucky with both, you know, two great bands and just two great books that probably couldn't be more diametrically opposed in style and content, but still great books on either end of the spectrum, I think.
Take a second and tell us some of the work that you've put out for some of our listeners who may not be familiar with your catalog.
Sure. We started, me and Amy started by writing a book together, and that was called No Slam Dancing, which actually turns 10 years old this year, which is unfucking believable. But we got together. It was a book that Amy had started writing, and then about 10 years into her writing it and starting and stopping and hitting the wall, me and Amy randomly met on the internet, which is a whole other story. But eventually we wrote that book together. We did the thing where, you know, you get a literary agent and they shopped it around and talked to publishers and all this cool stuff. We took meetings and nobody gave a shit. Nobody was interested in a punk rock club from New Jersey. So we just said, fuck it. We did, Kickstarter was big back then in 2014. And we raised enough money mostly just from Old City Gardens patrons. We wrote the book. It was great. And we were so grateful that we were able to get it funded. We said, you know, let's publish, but let's become like a record label. And going back to what we were talking about earlier, our kind of idea, what we based it on, was Ian and Discord. Like, let's do really cool shit, and, you know, for discerning punks, for people who came up in our world. So we started there. We came up with the name DeWolf because my last name's DeLodovico. Her last name is Wolfing. We just slapped it on there just to pretend like we had a publishing company. And, you know, we put it out. We had a little bit of success. So then we ended up working with a very talented dude from New York named Freddie Alva, who's been a writer, a scene person forever. We did a book with him called Urban Styles. Freddie's really well... knows a lot about street art, and he wanted to do a book detailing the intersection of graffiti art and the New York hardcore scene of the late 80s and through the 90s. So we did that. That was Urban Styles. That led us to, we did the Hard Times Anthology, which is that old zine from New Jersey, New York, that Amy did when she was a teenager with a friend of hers. So we did a nice, like, compendium. We put all the issues in the one book, and it was all cut and paste, like, from all the original elements of the zine that it's been in Amy's basement for, like, 40 years. So we did all that stuff, and that brought us to Dave, that brought us to Mike. We got another book that we put out at the end of this year by a guy named Brian Garrity, who did a lot of photography in the 90s for big names like Spin, Rolling Stones. We kind of stepped up and did a photo book. It's got stuff like Rancid and Nirvana and Radiohead, things like that. So we kind of, you know, we want to be as diverse as possible while the only thing we keep as a rule is it's got to be a part of subculture of some kind, whether it's visual, musical is where we started because that's where we both came from, but really anything that's underground.
So did I see that you guys are taking on Marla Watson's book as well?
Yeah, we bought a bunch.
Yeah, we've talked to her.
Yeah,
that's amazing.
Great. It's a great book.
Yeah, absolutely. We have it up on our shelves over here. And great book.
I just bought that as a fan when it came out. I thought it was great, and I ended up friending her on social media. We just started chatting, like, not even about music or anything like that. She was just so goddamn nice and cool and awesome. And then what really did it with me is I saw on her social media she was out east here, and she was in a little town called New Hope. And in that town there's a bar called John and Peter's that's been around for for, I think, over 50 years. And it's just this really eclectic little bar that's had lots and lots of shows over the years. Well, my partner Amy just finished writing an oral history about it. And here's Marla posting a picture. She bought the book, sight unseen, just because she was out there. I guess she had some connection to the area. I still didn't get the full story. And I saw that, and I was like, that's the coolest thing I've ever seen. So I reached out to her. We were talking, and I saw that, you know, a lot of other smaller outlets were selling her books. So I made sure we do a lot of work with Earth Island Books over in the UK. So we started talking with them. I know they carried it. It just worked out really well. She's awesome.
And that's a really, like you were talking earlier about quality art in books.
Oh yeah.
That's a well done book.
That's straight DIY too. She did that herself, which is cool.
That's just amazing that she was able to.
It's amazing.
That off.
Yeah. She's so cool. She actually donated a bunch of pictures to our documentary from the.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. So she's helping us out. We're huge advocates of hers, and whatever she's got going on, we try to promote it. So yeah, she's
absolutely. She's
cool. Well, it's great. Absolutely. It's great, the camaraderie with all these people. It's just like the old days on a record label, you know,
right?
Artists together, and we were just out at the Punk Rock Museum. Steven, these guys are going out for the 1 year anniversary. You'd be live broadcasting from there. So we were just talking about that. But, we were together with Dave and Mark Wasserman, who wrote the ska book, and Danny Mariano. Yeah. And it was just really cool to just hang out for the whole weekend. We gave tours, and actually did a Channel 3 Adrenaline OD jam session.
I saw that.
Yeah, Mike got up, played, and all that. So it was a great time. You guys will have a blast when you guys go out.
Yeah, no, yeah. They're so cool there. Yeah, they've been, like, we had them on our podcast before they opened, and I mean, that museum gets so much attention. Like, I'll do a post on them, and we'll get, like, 10,000 likes.
Oh, yeah.
It's crazy. And, like, and so we've been connected with them, and, yeah, we pitched it. I'm like, hey, you know, our friend works there, and he's like, yeah, you guys should do a podcast there. I'm like, fuck yeah. And
absolutely.
So I hit him up, and they're like, you should do the 1 year. I'm like, fuck yeah, the Vandals are playing. I mean, it's going to be cool. We're there for 2 days. We're going to be doing 2 days there.
That's awesome.
And, you know, to speak to your point, too, about the camaraderie, like one of the things, it's always been a thing with me personally, but it's even more so doing this kind of stuff professionally. Like, I've never been, you know, one of those people. I don't have a competitive bone in my body in any aspect of life. And when it comes to this kind of stuff, like, I love what other publishers are doing. I love when other publishers are bringing out books. I don't care. Like, I am not jealous of that. I am happy to work with anyone and everyone that comes from our world, that I'll reach out to anybody. If I see something really cool they're doing online, I don't give a shit if I'm like being a dork or a stand-up, but I will message them and I'll tell them, whatever you're doing is awesome, and if there's anything we can do to be a part of it, let me know. So, and I see a lot more of that than I see of negativity or of tearing people down in our world, so that's a really good optimistic positive sign to me.
Right on, Steven.
Well, we're definitely of the mindset that a rising tide raises all ships, right? You know, you look out for each other, and that's how you keep this thing growing and alive and thriving, right?
Yeah, we don't have any competition, man. We're all about, I mean, we all have day jobs, so it's like we're not like scrounging.
Exactly.
Make a living from this. This is a glorified hobby for us, you know. This is
exactly
a hobby for us. But yeah, man. So hey, I appreciate you, you know, taking the call. And so I think what we're going to do now is we're going to end this segment. We're going to have Mike play a song. He's going to pick a song. And then, you're gonna stay on the line with us, and we're gonna give Dave a call and talk about his book.
Excellent.
All right, so Mike, you got something you want to play?
We were just talking about the new record by the Drowns, so why don't we play their title track of the new record, Blacked Out?
Blacked Out, beautiful,
rad.
Looking forward to hearing that.
Nice. And crash and cease and crash.
All right, man. That was a great segment, man. Mike McGran, we love having Mike McGran in the house with us. He comes out here, and that was a great conversation that we had. What do you think about Steve?
Anytime I get to talk to Mike is a good time. Such a great conversationalist. You could probably let him go for like 2 hours and not get bored with the conversation you'll have with him.
Yeah, it's such a nice guy. And then, you know, it was cool to get the perspective of, you know, publishing, you guys working together, and how it all came about. That was really interesting for me to learn about that whole side of it. So that was really cool. And I think to really just keep it going, you know, with all the great books and everything that you guys are publishing, I say we give Dave Scott a call. You know, you guys put out his Adrenaline OD book, and we're fans of that band, so we're really stoked. So
excellent.
Let me chime him in really quick.
Excellent. I feel like there should be hold music playing.
Something off of Humongous Fungus Among Us. Uh-huh.
There you go.
Yeah, totally. So, Dave.
Be the fastest elevator music you ever heard.
Exactly.
All right, that's working. Hello?
Hi, is this Dave?
Yeah, sure is. How you doing, dude?
What's up, man? Hey, so I got Steve on the other line. I'm going to chime him in. And yeah, this is Stan. We'll do a little introduction once I get him on the call with us.
Right on, dude.
All right, thanks. All right, Steve, are you there?
I am here.
All right, beautiful. I got Dave on the line. All right, so I'm going to do a little introduction so Dave knows who he's talking to, and then we'll kind of just go into it.
Sounds good.
All right, awesome. So we've got Dave Scott on the line from Adrenaline OD. Super stoked. Read his book, and this is the first time we've talked to him. So just I want to introduce who we are. So I'm Stan. We've got Bob the Bastard on the line, and hey. Chris, Mr. Producer.
Hello.
Wow, that's three games nice. After. Remember at that's 12 right. something got, in the morning. Awesome, we're doing good.
We got a tripod here. So yeah, so you know, we had a nice conversation with Mike McGran. He was in the studio with us, and we were talking about his book. And when I first put this episode together, we definitely wanted to talk to you, and I thought it'd be cool to kind of do a dual book discussion. So that's why we. So thanks for joining the call. I know it's kind of late for you, but yeah, we love what you did, and so I just kind of wanted to get into it.
Let's go.
Yeah, so if it's Tuesday, this must be Walla Walla, man. That's a great name for the book, by the way, and very much love the stories, and we're all fans of the band, obviously, you know, fastest punk band in the world, and you guys still play those songs today, which is amazing, by the way, and we wanted to learn a little bit about what motivated you to write the book in the first place. That was your first book. I know you wrote for, like, Maximum Rock and Roll and stuff like that, but that was your first book, right?
Yeah. I never, ever thought about, like, writing a book. I mean, I barely read books. Yeah, I think the last book I read before writing this was like Howard Stern's Private Parts. And before that, it was like The Cat in the Hat. So it was never on my like to-do list to write a book. But it was just like a flow of events that kind of happened. I was writing stuff on my Facebook post about like this day in AOD history, you know, and just kind of making it funny stories about like shows that we played on this day, you know, back when, and people would like be like, hey, you guys should write a book. And one of those people was Steve, who got on the line, and we started talking. And I think, you know, within a short amount of time, I was like up in Philadelphia signing a contract to write a book. So it's just like, it happened so freaking quick. It was like, oh my God. Next thing I knew, like, I was writing a book. A year later, it was done, and, you know, had a book out. Never would have thought about it in a million years.
Wow.
That was one of the people care in a million years.
That was one of those things where, like, you know, I didn't know Dave outside of, like, we had become friends on Facebook, and I knew about his, like I was saying earlier, I knew about AOD from when I was in high school. But I didn't know Dave, but when the idea was, I didn't care if Dave couldn't write a complete sentence, I was going to do that book.
There was some stuff I've written has been on the stalls of like Men's Room, like
but seriously, without the joking, it's exactly like what Dave said. I was very familiar with his posts about, you know, AOD history, and I had long known for many years some of the amazing bills they have been a part of, and just knowing the type of band that they were, I would never ever call them a joke band. They were a very, very good band, a very smart band with a very good sense of humor. Right. But the fact that they kind of came out of that A7, like really rough, that like Lower East Side New York hardcore scene, not being a New York hardcore band, but being able to fit into that scene, that was it for me.
So did you set out when you put this band together and when you started writing, did you set out to be a bit different, set you guys apart from what was going on at A7, the scene that was around you? Because it was all a lot of hardcore, a lot of really tough, you know, from the streets. This is, you know, kind of a war zone type of vibe, right? You guys went a different direction.
It wasn't conscious. I mean, we were just trying to be ourselves. I mean, it was never a decision to, like, let's be funny. We were just being ourselves. I think the one decision we did make was we started to write, like, political songs, like, off the bat, and we realized, like, there's people like the Dead Kennedys that do this way better than us, and let's just write about what we know and what we see. And I think it was just our like reflections of our surroundings in New Jersey. And I mean, if you're from New Jersey, you really have grown up in a scenario where you're used to people like making fun of you for being from New Jersey. So you kind of grow a thick hide. Right. And you really, like everybody I know like that grew up in New Jersey, we all have a really good sense of humor, but it's very dark.
Yeah. You know?
And you guys, yeah,
I think we all come from a very similar upbringing. And, you know, going to like places like the A7 Club when I was like, you know, probably like 15, 16 in the worst freaking neighborhoods in they can imagine. You know, it was like, it was very scary for its day, but it was also very exciting, you know? And, I think that we had to like really have a balance between that. I mean, there was we really got along well with a lot of the people that were from outside of like the direct New York City scene, like the Connecticut people, like more of the suburban kids. I think that we could relate to each other because we were all going into like the city from a different perspective of people like Harley Flanagan, who like were city kids, you know?
Right.
And being in those neighborhoods back in those days was like, it was mind blowing to think about now that, you know, holy crap. I mean, it was like a war zone.
Yeah, a lot of danger. It was a lot of crime going on back then, right?
Oh, it was beyond crime. I mean, the places that we were playing, like in Alphabet City, back in those days, people really have no clue at how bad those streets were. There were no cops that were going to come and help you back then. It was just drug dealers, prostitutes, pimps, and junkies, and that was it. You know. It was no man's land, you know?
The only place you guys could play, right? You know, it's like they accepted you.
Yeah, well, you know what? That was it. There was no, like, clubs in New Jersey that was, like, open to punk rock, you know? I mean, the first punk rock shows I remember were, like, Max's Kansas City, like, the Stimulator shows. Like, that's pretty much where we all kind of met each other, you know? Like the whole New York hardcore scene kind of evolved out of like those Stimulator shows. And then after Max's closed, like CBGB's wasn't even a thing back then because the original, like, first wave of punk rock had happened and died. So, like, all the bands like the Ramones and Talking Heads and Television, they had, like, got on to bigger things, and CBGBs did not have, like, hardcore back then. So it went from, like, Max's to A7. And that's pretty much where, like, the whole New York hardcore scene happened. And after A7, like, kind of, like, fizzled out, then CBGB saw the popularity of the hardcore scene starting, and they started booking hardcore shows. And that's how everything kind of got big.
What about Jersey? Did it have any? Do you guys have anything going on there? Wasn't there? I'm not from the East Coast. I've never been to the East Coast, but City Gardens, I think, and there's a couple other venues out there that did it come around later on.
Yeah, it was definitely a little bit later on. I think the first club I remember playing in Jersey was called the Dirt Club, and they had been around for a while, and they were kind of big in the power pop scene, like bands like the Smithereens and Blues Travelers came out of that club. But we were like the first hardcore band to ever play there. And I think that was probably like one of the very first clubs. There was a place in Hoboken called Miles Square City that was even like before like Maxwell's, which was a popular club. And they were really, you know, the first two places that kind of started booking hardcore. But it didn't last. Like, you know, hardcore shows would happen, and then like there'll be a fight or something, and then, you know, there'll be a ban on hardcore. So it was always tough, and we'd always have to find a new place. And eventually, like with Jersey, just like a lot of other places, we would like have to find like halls and stuff and put on our own shows.
Yeah, I was curious about that because out here we do, we're lucky with the weather, especially California, right? So there's always backyard parties. There's always some kid just willing to wreck his house for a show. But I wonder if you had that kind of option out there.
Wasn't too much as far as like house parties. I mean, the scene when we first started in 81 was like so small. It kind of grew organically, and just like a lot of scenes do, we had a great DJ on college radio, Pat Duncan, who was on WFMU, and he would announce like what shows are coming up, and he would play demos from bands like cassettes that nobody would ever play, and then like a fanzine started popping up, and the scene kind of grew organically from there. There wasn't like an immediate like hey, let's like book like hardcore bands all over New Jersey, and it's in New Jersey is also so strange because it's a pretty big state and it's spread out. So there's like northern New Jersey was kind of like the New York City kind of scene, you know, we were like that's where we were from, like northern New Jersey. Then there was like central New Jersey, which had like the New Brunswick scene, and also like all the shore bands, like the Mother Records bands, if you guys are familiar with those, that whole scene, bands like Fatal Rage, Chronic Sick, and The Worst. So that was like the scene. And then South Jersey had like City Gardens, which was closer to like Philly. So is, you know, being a band in New Jersey was kind of cool because once we started getting going, we almost have like three different scenes we could play, like northern New Jersey, central New Jersey, and south New Jersey. And it was like three different states almost. It was three completely different scenes. Yeah. You know? So it was kind of interesting.
Yeah, that's rad. You know, talk a little bit. I've always been intrigued by A7. What were some of the crazy shows that you went to at that place? I heard that was really small, right? It was like a little room.
Oh, yeah, the size of somebody's living room. Absolutely, like the size of a living room. But I've seen so many great shows here. I've seen the Beastie Boys there. I've seen Reagan Youth, Urban Waste, The Freeze, the FUs, SSD Control. I went and saw Henry sing with Black Flag for the very first time ever at A7 Club after Black Flag played Urban Plaza with Dez. I've seen so many great shows. I mean, that was a hangout, though. You know, it was like every weekend we were either playing there or just hanging out there, you know?
Nice.
It was like, if I could jump in real quick too, one of the reasons, one of the biggest reasons I wanted to work with Dave as far as putting a book out is not just his own band stuff, but just from knowing, you know, watching Dave's Facebook for years, he's sort of like a scholar of this version of East Coast hardcore that I personally love so much. So I knew he's got so much of that knowledge that I could spend like 2 or 3 years just picking his brain, being like, so tell me about that time you played with blah blah blah. So that was one of the great things I got out of working with Dave on this too.
Yeah. But we were fans. You know, I mean, you know, as pure as punk rock can get, we started a band because we loved frickin' punk rock, you know? Mm. So you know, we just happened to be at the right place at the right time. We were really lucky. We were the first punk rock band in our state. I mean, aside from the Misfits, that ever like kind of made a dent outside of New Jersey, you know? So we got really lucky. But, I mean... Damn, I, you know, being, you know, in my teens and being able to tour and play with all these bands I freaking love, and, you know, hanging out with people that, you know, were my idols was just like a great way to grow up, you know? You would never get that in any other world, you know?
And not for nothing, but Dave's book has a couple of the best Misfit stories you'll ever read anywhere.
Did you make it out to the West Coast?
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God, yeah. Many times. In fact, when we would tour, we would end up spending like a week or two in the Berkeley area. We would hang out at the Maximum Rock and Roll headquarters at Tim Yohannan's house, and we would just stay there for a week or two. And then we would go to L.A. and do the same thing and hang out there for a couple weeks. But, yeah, we played the West Coast every tour. Yeah.
What were some of your favorite like venues out here on the West Coast early on?
Definitely like in Frisco, the MAB, Mabuhay Gardens. We played Cafe de Grand in L.A.
Nice.
I liked that place a lot. We played a place called Roxanne's in Arcadia. And I remember we were hanging out in the parking lot. This, I think, was 84 or 85. And the opening band had just gone on, and they were doing a cover of one of our songs. So I was like, what the fuck? I walked inside, and the first, like, two or three songs the band did was, like, AOD songs. And it was NoFX playing the third show.
Oh, that's sick. Hell yeah.
Yeah.
Hell yeah. Did you guys play the Olympic?
What was that?
Did you guys play the Olympic Auditorium?
No, but I had gone to the Olympic for that big Dead Kennedys International show. We were in town that week. It was after the Olympics in 84, I think it was. But I had gone to that show with Dead Kennedys and Reagan Youth and BGK, and it was a gigantic bill. And that, at the time, was the biggest punk rock show I'd ever seen in my life. I mean, there was no, like, Riot Fest back in those days. There was no outdoor festivals.
Yeah.
This was an arena that was packed. And, you know, I remember sitting in, like, the upper deck and looking down on the Dead Kennedys show, and there was so much pit activity that looked like a swarm of bees from the top. It was, you know, it's pretty amazing.
That's awesome. Yeah. Hell yeah. How about Fenders? Did you guys play Fenders?
Yeah, played Fenders with Dag Nasty and the Vandals.
Nice.
And the first time we were on tour in 84, Keith Morris had gotten a show at Fenders with like the Dickies and the Vandals and TSOL. But it was our Invite Ourselves tour where we were borrowing equipment from the opening bands. So when we got to the show, like, there was no bands that were going to lend us their equipment, and we ended up not being able to play.
Oh, bummer.
But it was fun to hang out, though.
Hell yeah.
You got to play with a lot. Was crazy. I mean, that was probably the biggest show we ever played in our history as a band was Fenders with Dag Nasty and the Vandals, which was sold out. You know, that was a crazy show.
You played a lot of great shows with a lot of bands like Fear and Gate Green and, you know, SNFU. I mean, you played with every Bad Brains. You guys have played with a lot of bands.
Yeah, we had a really good show in San Diego at a roller rink with Fear, S-Nephew, and Gangrene all in the same bill. That was a lot of fun.
Jesus, that's a fucking lineup.
Yeah, that was a good show.
Jesus.
I love Gangrene.
Yeah, that seems a fit. Oh, God. It fits your
style. One of the first hardcore shows I ever saw with Cro-Mags and a Gangrene.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah. One of the earliest hard. I actually came into music as a metalhead. So the first, like, really, really pure hardcore show I saw was end of '86, Gangrene and Cro-Mags down here in Philly.
Oh, man.
I can't even picture you banging your head.
as a long haired 15-year-old kid, it scared the shit out of me.
Culture shock.
Yeah, pretty hardcore for you.
Oh, dude, I was like, I don't know who these people are, but get me out of here. I'm going to get my hair cut.
Yeah, Gangrene. I think my first real show was Bad Religion and Gangrene at Fender's. We're nice. little younger than you guys. We're old, but we're not fucking as old.
And, right.
You're not
Dave's age.
Yeah, we're not Dave's age. Right, but, right. But we're like fucking we just turned 50, so we're like that age. And so
I'm with you guys. I'm your age.
Yeah, yeah. So we started going to shows like in 87, 88, you know, that's when we're like in high school and shit. And that was gnarly. I barely remember.
You know, my very first show was? First show I ever went to was fucking Merciful Fate, Motorhead, and Exciter.
Holy shit, that was your first show?
Yeah. Jesus, 1985, man. First show I ever went to. It was like a theater, like a 2,000-seat theater here in Philly. First live band I ever saw in my life was fucking Motorhead.
Holy shit, that's like one of my favorite bands of all time. My first show was fucking Def Leppard. So, you know, that really is cool.
Nice.
I was a kid, you know, it was the high and dry shit. But anyway, yeah, I grew up in the same way, man. I was from a metalhead type of household, and I fell in with some of these punk kids, right? And,
yep.
Next thing you know, man, I was converted real fast, so I understand where you're coming from.
Amen.
So let's talk about the book a little bit more. So what's going on? You guys put it out, and what kind of promotion have you guys done for that?
We did what we do on our side as the publisher. You know, we did as much as we could with social media. I'm very lucky, but you know, I've worked for a lot of years as a freelance journalist. I actually did work for years in hip hop, but I, you know, did a lot with punk rock too. So I've got a decent amount of like contacts, and between me and Dave, you know, we got a lot of people talking about the book. We got some articles. Dave did some interviews. But really, like with all this stuff, all the groundwork is everything Dave's put into it. You know, Dave arranged all these live AOD reunion shows that were part book parties, part shows. Nice. And, you know, we had a really good run at the end of the year. Dave, you should tell them about the shows. They were fun.
Yeah, what he's trying to tell you is we had to blow a lot of press.
Yeah.
Nice. Oh, yeah. So have you been on so what's it been like promoting the book?
It's been fun. I mean, not for nothing. I think my favorite thing so far, which unfortunately Steve got sick and wasn't able to do, was come out to Vegas to the Punk Rock Museum.
Yeah. That broke my heart.
Yeah, he set this whole thing up and then got sick and wasn't able to make the trip. It was heartbreaking for everybody. Yeah,
spent the week in the friggin' hospital.
Yeah,
but it was good though. It was good. We had a nice whole DeWolf little weekend out there, and you know, all my guys had fun, and that's all that mattered to me.
Yeah, no, that's
my
cool.
Favorite part about the whole thing was I got a call about a week or two ago from a friend of mine. He was like, dude, I'm in the bathroom of the Punk Rock Museum. I'm sitting here taking a leak and I'm holding my dick and I look over and I'm looking at your sticker on the bathroom wall. I was like, fuck yeah. Fuck nice. Yeah.
That's a cool museum, man. We dig it. We're going to be out there. I think we told Steve this. We're gonna be doing a podcast at their 1 year anniversary coming up in at the end of March. So,
oh, cool! You're gonna love it. It was a really good time. It's a great place. I mean, and the fact that they have so much stuff that they can keep moving into the place is amazing.
Yeah,
no, and the people that we dealt with out there that run that place, like from top to bottom, were absolutely top notch. Like they were just the sweetest, nicest, most helpful, accommodating people I've dealt with in any aspect of music whatsoever. Like they were they were great.
Yeah, no attitude.
Good care of us. Yeah, I get that vibe as well. That's great.
But yeah, I think that ended up being, you know, I hope it was good for the authors individually, but I can tell you from me and Amy's aspect, like it's really did a number for the Wolf, like just, you know, people seeing the pictures and just knowing that we were out there. That whole week and ever since, I've been getting messages and emails of just positivity and people being like, you know, this is the first time I ever heard about your company, and it sounds like what you're doing is exactly, you know, the kind of stuff that we love. And that's kind of basically for me, that's what it's all about. So for us as a publisher, it was great. And again, I gotta thank all these guys, whether, you know, it's Dave or it's Mike or Danny Marianino or Mark Wasserman. They all, you know, gave up their time to come out and do all this shit. So I mean, it's on those guys. It was that whole Las Vegas couple of days, you know, was a really big deal for us.
It was fun for me because I got to meet the other authors. I mean, I've known Mike for decades, but, you know, meeting Danny and Mark was very cool too. And yeah, it was a great time. I did two tours of the museum, and I really had no idea if I was going to be able to talk enough to get through two tours. And like the first tour went like 45 minutes over, and the second tour went like 2 hours over. They were locking up by the time I got done. So it's like there's so much to like to really look at and focus on. And if you're like a punk rock nerd like me, man, you're gonna love the place.
Yeah.
Oh, we can't even wait to go. We've been waiting a whole year for this, so we're excited. And
nice.
Every time we hear stories like this, it just pumps us up even more. So right on, man.
Nice.
What's going on with you guys now? Dave, are you writing still?
I'm actually working on the screenplay version of the book right now.
Oh, sweet.
Yeah, I've been working on this for about a year now, and it's about a little more than halfway done, and it's coming along really freaking good. Like as you know, when I got into like the writing mode of the book, which once I got about like halfway done with the book, and I kind of felt my own, like, you know, I could hear myself talking through the book. I'm getting that with the movie now, and it's funny as balls, dude. It's way funnier than the book. I've taken like all the funniest things in the book and just condensed it into a 3.5 month tour. So it's fucking funny. It's hell, man. I think it's probably the best goddamn road movie since It's a Mad, Bad, Bad, Bad World. And I'm gonna, you can quote me on that, dude.
That's great.
You can totally quote me on that.
And of course, after that, you know, any kind of literary endeavor that Dave decides to make for the rest of his life, he's always got a home with D. Wolf. So unless he can go make some bigger money elsewhere, he's always got a home with D. Wolf.
Thank you.
Are you, is Adrenaline OD doing some touring out on the West Coast anytime soon?
Well, we're doing some shows this year. We have a string of warm-up shows in the end of May in the New York, New Jersey, Connecticut area. And then we have some big shows in July that we can't announce yet. And then at the end of the year, I think we're going to head over to the West Coast. We've been offered a couple things. We're trying to work out stuff because our singer just got a full-time job. So it's like
what a loser.
From being able to do like Friday, Saturday, and Sundays to just doing Saturday and Sundays now. So it's made it a little more difficult. But we still have some options. And we're definitely to get to the West Coast before the year's up, for sure.
Yeah, you got to definitely keep in contact with us so we can help promote whatever you have going on, for sure.
Absolutely. If we do something, you will definitely know about it. And if we play the West Coast, I hope it's with Channel 3, so...
Oh, yeah, that'd be great. Whoever you play with, we're going to be there. We'll document it. That's going to be a blast.
Excellent.
We're all big fans, so we're grateful to have you on the pod.
Yeah, so, yeah, with that said, though, you know, we appreciate you guys taking the time to talk to us, and this is our first...
thank you for having me on.
Yeah, this is our first... recording that we or a podcast we've done this year, so you guys
this is our first year. You two are the first ones we've done in 24, so
all right.
Oh, cool.
Glad
we could break the 2024 cherry for you.
We're late starters, man. We've been like focused on, we're doing a documentary. It's a pretty big endeavor on the Orange County punk scene. It's called Where the County Line Ends, the Evolution of Orange County Punk, and it really takes it from 1977 to current days. So we've interviewed 80 people.
Excellent.
And it's just like daunting. We're kind of focusing on that, but we're getting back into doing pods again, and we're stoked to have you guys on. And thanks for taking the time, and I think at this point what we're going to do is we're going to ask Steve if he wants to take us out with the song.
You know, I gave this a lot of thought, and I was going to try and come up with something like now and very hip and very cool. But
he settled for ABBA.
Exactly. I don't know a single fucking thing that's going on right now. Not because I'm one of those miserable old people that doesn't think new music is any good. I'm the exact opposite. I just don't have the stamina to keep up with it. So that being said, I think I'm going to take it back, and I'm going to keep the Philly pride going with the greatest hardcore band to ever come out of Philadelphia, Why Die? And we could play anything off of the Place of the Sun record, but I would suggest Not Shit.
Perfect.
All right,
man.
Well, done.
Great choice. And thanks for taking the time, guys. And we'll talk to you guys soon.
Yeah, keep up the good work.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. Really appreciate it.
You bet. All right. Take care, guys.
Thank you.
Cheers.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Dude, fuck, that was fun, man. But this is, you know, we haven't done one of these just audio pods in a while, and I'm stoked to be sitting at the table with you guys first time this year, so I think it was fun.
I'm kind of feeling the audio pods now. It's like not as stressful as filming. We started filming for like the YouTube stuff, and we're trying to do that, but man, this is kind of like getting back to our roots.
It feels comfortable. It feels like I sit in a real comfortable chair. You know what I'm saying? Like, hey, we just fell right back into it. And hopefully we'll do more of these. And we've been absent for a while because we've had, like Stan said, we've been really focusing on trying to get this movie pushed along. And that's a gigantic endeavor. But we have some really cool and exciting things coming up. We mentioned earlier the Punk Rock Museum at the end of March. And, Stan, that's going to be a big one for us. It's the one-year anniversary for the museum.
Yeah. And then we're working on some more guests. You know, we're some other authors and other musicians that we're going to, once we get them locked in, we'll announce them and get them either in studio or on the phone. And then we got some t-shirts coming out. So keep an eye out, follow us and buy a shirt, cause that helps us out. And then follow us on YouTube, Instagram, TikTok and Facebook. It's the Punk Rock Chronicles. So follow us, support us.
Yes. And, along with the t-shirts, we have just a few skateboard decks left, the Shattered Faith run. And then we're about ready to wrap that whole run up. And then who knows what we're going to do next, right?
I'm kind of waiting for coffee mugs to come back.
Oh, yeah. I got coffee mugs.
Because I shattered mine.
Oh, yeah. I was going to make some coffee mugs, yeah.
Chris got angry.
Those are the best. No, it just fell. It fell out of my car.
So yeah, we got more merch coming up, guys, and we all appreciate your support. Thank you very much. So
all right. So you know what? I'm gonna. Are we doing a song?
Yeah,
I already picked one, so I'm out of this one.
All right. How about you know, I've been listening to a lot of RKL, and how about we do something off of the Mystic era?
Life in a Bottle.
All right, let's do Life in the Bottle.
Word.
All right then.